Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is October 21st, 2024, and we broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening over our Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in the scripture reading. We're in the Epistle of Peter, 1 Peter chapter 5. So we'll pick up with that. Let me shut some of these things down first. Okay, 1 Peter chapter 5, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 5. The elders which are among you I exhort, who am also an elder, and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed, feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly, not for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind, neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being ensamples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud, and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour, whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. But the God of all grace, who hath called us unto his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after that ye have suffered a while, make you perfect, establish, strengthen, settle you. To him be glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. By Silvanus, a faithful brother unto you, as I suppose, I have written briefly, exhorting and testifying that this is the true grace of God wherein ye stand. The church that is at Babylon, elected together with you, saluteth you, and so doth Marcus, my son. Greet ye one another with a kiss of charity. Peace be with you all that are in Christ Jesus. Amen. The end of the first epistle general of Peter.
Okay. By the way, am I coming through here?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. You know, that song sounded a little sour. It was speeding up and couple of different problems. I'm thinking, I started downloading the website at 11 a.m. this morning. It's still downloading, and I think it's causing some problems. Hopefully my connection's okay, so it's taking up probably a lot of broadband. So if it sounds a little sour, I'm breaking up a little bit, that's the reason. So, but I guess I'm coming through right now okay. I don't see Jan or Terry here. Eric, do you have the questions, or have you heard from them? Usually one of them are here.
I have not heard from either of them, and no, I do not have the questions.
Okay.
Looks like, no, I do not.
Okay, right, well, we'll just bypass that. If they come in, we'll go through any questions that were sent in. I did see a couple that come through, but I'm not, not sure what. Okay, so I guess we'll just move over to an open queue here. Let me open the queue. All right, so if anybody has any questions, comments, or anything they'd like to offer, the queue is open. While we're waiting for anybody to get into the queue, I've put a couple of new things up over the weekend here. And by the way, I think I've shared this before. I'll just share it again. You know, if you look on the right-hand side of our website, it gives you a lot of information, gives you the stats on, you know, how many people we have doing what, how many, what our membership is. It also tells us anything new that's on the site that comes up. So down on the bottom right here, and this is pretty much on every page, you'll see, you know, our membership right now is 11,500 and change. And we've got, let's see, 191 county committees of safety in process of organizing. We just started organizing here in Dutchess County. It's been going pretty good. We're looking, hopefully, to make contact with our sheriff and our first contact in a couple of weeks. But also, if you start to look on here, you see who's online at the time, but you also see recent content. So I put a lot of information. I mean, if you will click on the content, you should be able to go to the page where I might have put something up. In this case, we put up the Constitution with Carl Miller. I don't know how many people are familiar with him. These are pretty long videos. I think they're about an hour and a half a piece, maybe a little longer than that. I don't remember, but they're good, powerful, a lot of good information. Gives a lot of good information on dealing with the courts and dealing with judges and so on and so forth. But under our education tab, we also put some other things. I put up a new tab, if I can find it myself, let's see, educational videos. So a lot of information on China and North Korea. Of course, the Constitution, Carl Miller, we just put that up there. We also put the constitutional class up there. Now, we have this constitutional class inside one of our studies. I believe it's in the constitutional study. We have quite a few people in there. Thomas Woods, we've got Bodnarik, and numerous other individuals. But this was this was the first constitutional class I ever took. I took it with Gerard. Gerard and I took it together live. And this went up on the internet, and so we pulled it down and put it on our website. Again, it's a really great introduction to the Constitution. So if anybody has never really looked into the Constitution and is looking for a decent introduction to the Constitution, that's the one to go to. Let's see what else we put up here. And we got a lot of stuff up here, by the way. We've got a page on government, One Nation Under God, and Subversion. In the case of government, a lot of good insights of information on how our government is formed, the American form of government. Government explained, the difference between a republic and a democracy, individual versus collectivism. Again, a lot of this stuff is in some of our courses, but I figured I'd put it up here on a page. It's good information. And it's a good introduction to who we are as a people, you know. So there was something else I wanted to bring up here, if I can remember what it was. It'll come to me if I can't pick up on it in a moment. Oh, I think I remember what it was. Yes. Under Starter Committee of Safety. Now, if you follow the breadcrumb trail, which by just clicking on Starter Committee of Safety on that tab, you'll eventually, a couple of pages in, you'll come to the page that has all of our handbooks on it, handbooks, videos, and tools. And when you get to that, we started to put up a lot of videos. I don't know if I mentioned this last week or not, but we started to put up a lot of videos on how to introduce the Committee of Safety, how to go through the process. First of all, the presentment, how to present government by consent, which is presenting committees of safety. And it's an hour-long video. It's pretty informative. I think it lays out an introduction pretty powerfully. Then the first order of business. And I notice some committees of safety out there have not been really following the protocol. And protocol requires the handbook downloads and to follow step by step. But a lot of committees of safety have not been following that protocol. Hopefully, I'm going to be communicating with all of the committees of safety across the nation here, and start to talk with them about this: how to go about putting a committee of safety together, how to structure that committee of safety, how to do the resolution and the charter. And the first order of business, of course, is to create a charter. Second order of business is to create resolutions. And so we've put the basics down, the things that will lay us out and frame us in such a way that we're interchangeable with other committees of safety. Because it's extremely important that we have communications with other committees of safety. We're going to have to work together, just like our founding fathers in the different colonies, the 13 colonies. They came together through the committees of safety that were operating within their colonies, but they came together to work together to form the United States of America. And they continued working with the committees of safety right into after the United States was created and the Constitution was in place, and that's how they had government by consent. That's how they controlled their government. And we too can control our government, requiring them to be obedient to the Constitution that they took an oath to uphold and defend. And also to be obedient to us. We are the masters, they're the servants. Unfortunately, these people think they're the masters and we're the servants. They've turned it upside down. Well, we got to turn it right side up again. And the ways you do that is through the committees of safety. Committees of safety are extremely powerful when people come together with one focus to take back our political process, to take back our educational process, to take back our judicial process, and many, many other things. So again, we need to create ourselves in such a way. For instance, the political the political committee, which is a subcommittee to the general committee, which is the Committee of Safety itself, of course. But the political committee gets a little bit complex in the sense that it breaks up in different ways, depending on how election positions play out. For instance, your congressman, your chair, with other counties. And it may be part of this county, part of that county, and part of another county. And so we have to come together during the election time, particularly the primaries, in order to put people onto the ballot, because that's what committeemen do. And the committees of safety are the true committeemen. So in that process, we need to be able to work together. We need to organize. So I've laid all that out. I'm kind of skipping ahead a bit, but let me just go down this route, and we'll come back to that in a minute. After putting together a charter and a resolution together, that's when you put your paperwork together to go meet the sheriff. And it gives the sheriff very specific understanding of what we're doing, who we are, by what authority we act. And it lays out what we require of all elected individuals. And specifically, we do mention in our paperwork the sheriff. Because if the sheriff is not willing to become educated, if he's not willing to learn to defend the Constitution, if he's not willing to recognize that we elected him to enforce the law, not the county attorney, who will really push forward civil law, which we're looking to annihilate, and I do believe we're going to get it annihilated as we enter into the 2025. But in any event, it kind of puts him on the line. But it also gives him information on what we're doing and how we're going to be able to support him as a sheriff and back him up. And if he was to call posse comitatus, that we would respond to that. So, again, it's very powerful to put this paper to work together properly and then approach the sheriff and then eventually have the sheriff come to meet with the entire group, maybe a month and a half down the road after you have your first 5 or 10 minute meeting with him, which is really just to introduce and give him a lot of literature, give him copies of the sheriff's handbook, give him a copy of Government by Consent, and, of course, most importantly, our charter and resolutions. And in that, again, you know, we talk about removing these people who will not be obedient, who will not do their job, who will not uphold the Constitution above all these statutes and all this civil law stuff that they throw at us to incarcerate us in sort of a statutory prison. you know. But going to the political committee gets a little complex, as I mentioned a few minutes ago. And so we have to be able to work with other county committees of safety. And when we're electing our governors, or even, of course, well, hopefully we're going to turn the senators back to the states, and there'd be no election for the senators. They should be decided and voted in by the legislature of our state. Generally, the position or the way that it should work is that the governor would bring some people up for potential, senators, and then the legislators, the state legislators, would vote them in, you know, which one they want. And they had total recall at any given time. They're elected by the legislature, but if they're not going to do the will of the state, which ultimately is, the three branches of that state, particularly, the governor and the legislators, they can yank that senator out anytime they want and replace them. And that's pretty powerful. It's very important. And this is the balance of power that our founding fathers created in the Constitution. So we have to return that. They destroyed that by the 17th Amendment, which never was ratified anyway, number one. We laid that out and show that. But more importantly, it totally destroys completely the balance of power. And so we have to replace it because the people already have a representative. We don't need to have senators represent us. We have congressmen to represent us. And the states need to be represented. It also defies Article 5 of the Constitution, which states that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So they don't have a vote. They have nothing to say. States have nothing to say concerning the federal government, how it acts, or anything. Because they don't have legislative power in Washington. The people do, but again, we really don't have it either because all the special interest groups have taken that over, just like they've taken the Senate over. So we're really governed and ruled by the elite through the deep state, and therein is the problem, which we do believe is going to be corrected very, very soon. We also know that hard times are on the way. Anybody that's not prepared for that, you need to prepare for that. There's going to be a lot of violence in the streets soon, a lot of uprisings in the cities. That was the purpose of all of these illegals here in our nation. I've heard the numbers as high as 21 million. I've heard them as low as 14 million. But even 1 million is too many. But if a high percentage of those people, just 20% of those people, is for the sole purpose of creating havoc, that's a lot of people. That's millions of people. And that's what we have to deal with. We do know that Q has spoken about the 10 days of darkness, which, of course, we haven't experienced that yet. We're getting close to the violence and the rising. Not sure whether this is going to happen before the elections, during the elections, or after the elections, but at some point before this year is out, there's going to be problems. Also, a lot of wars that are being really flamed up, and we got a lot of problems heading our way. So you need to make sure that you have food, water, and you need to make whatever is basically needed to support yourself for at least 30 days. Q says 10 days, but even with that, if there is a disruption of our infrastructure, the movement of supplies, food, and whatever have you, then that's going to be a problem. There'll be a rush on the supermarkets and we'll have a big problem because they'll be wiped out real quick. We saw what happened with COVID when that came about, and you go to the store and there's a lot of things just wasn't getting it. And so it was pretty tough. And it's going to be a lot worse than that. There's going to be a blackout probably, and I don't know what that means. I've heard someone recently said that we may lose electric, we're going to lose communications. And during that time, the White Hats are really actually moving across the nation, really taking back control and suppressing, the revolt that these people are going to bring up into our country here, our nation. So we need to be prepared for that, especially if you're in the cities. But even if you're outside the cities, I'm sure it's going to bleed up there, too, to some degree. And but anyway, we need to be prepared. So just a warning, get prepared. But going back here, we did a thing on the political committee, and I've got a couple other videos, I think. Well, I've got them written up already, but I just haven't read through them to create a video. I use PowerPoint, Microsoft PowerPoint, to create these videos. So I have them all written up. I've got the educational committee written up, process, procedure, how to organize, and how to exercise your power, these people that sit on the school boards within our educational districts throughout our county. We teach people how to bring them back under the subjection of we the people, to respond to us, to obey to us, and if they refuse, how we can remove them. And we use the sheriff to do that. And that's why it's so important to get that relationship with the sheriff, to bring that sheriff on board with what we're doing, to empower him far more than the power that he even realizes that he has. And once we introduce that power to him and his true job, his true purpose, we would expect that he's going to respond. But if he doesn't, we need to recall him. It takes 90 days to recall anyone out of office. And that's what we have to do. We walk the papers, get the proper signatures, put them up for recall, a new election comes up, and we push forward for a new sheriff. And that's what we got to do if we have a sheriff that's not going to be obedient to the people, who's not going to protect us, who's not going to do their job and enforce the law and protect us from an overreaching government, whether that be a local government, state government, or feds. So again, each one of these committees, I am creating a short PowerPoint video. Of instructions, details, how to structure it, how it works, how to be empowered. And we have, of course, the Committee of Correspondence, which is extremely important. Anybody who's running the Committee of Correspondence needs to register up on our website here so that people who are looking for a Committee of Safety, they get into their state and into their county, and there's a Committee of Safety already up and going, they'll have that contact. Also, the purpose of the Committee of Correspondence is to make that communications and work with other committees of safety, particularly close by, you know, sister counties, but also working throughout the state, teaching them to do the same thing. So there is communications. Now, each county is free and independent, and we're free, you know, sovereign people to exercise our right the way we and control our government the way we see fit. But we still need to work with other counties. And I make the point in these videos that National Liberty Alliance has no desire to give anyone marching orders. We have no desire to teach people, to tell people what they need to do or say, hey, we all got to do this or we got to do that. But NLA will try to stimulate conversations on certain problems and get some communications going to come up with ideas on how we collectively, working together, can solve those problems. And so it's extremely important to have that communications exchange between. But again, getting back to NLA, our purpose solely is to teach people government by consent, to help to educate them, bring people to communicate, to make those communicational connections, and between committee of safeties to committees of safety, and eventually state to state. So we work together nationally if we're dealing with the federal government. And remember, all politics is local. All our representatives are in the election districts within we live in. So again, our congressman is local. We elect that individual from the local within the county here. And you got to work together with other counties when you share that particular congressman. But we also control our other representatives, our state representatives, our state senators, our state representatives, and also the governor. And again, you have to work collectively. But more important than people realize is also particularly controlling our local governments, our towns, our villages, our cities, our counties. And so all politics is local, and we have to realize that. And we have to work with others, hoping that they too, on the county next door, is doing the same thing, so that when the places where we kind of work together, that we're able to come together and do the business that we the people have to do in order to exercise our unalienable right of government by consent. So, okay. So anyway, these videos are available. I strongly suggest that people watch all these videos on this page. Again, they're mostly short. This one's an hour long. The rest of them, I think the longest one is like 30 minutes. Some of them are 20 minutes. One of them is 13 minutes. And again, there's going to be three or four more. And this is all about structuring it. All that I'm sharing in these videos, ultimately, you find them inside of our handbooks. We've got our handbooks down here where people come in and they can download these handbooks free of charge. Let me see if I can find them. They should have been up a little higher. Yeah, here they are. Word, PDFs. Okay, yeah. So the handbooks really will give you the same basic information, but it'll give you more detail. But the videos can be sufficient enough to really build off of that. You know, again, these handbooks, the committee man handbook breaks into detail a lot of information. And I think I'm really slow because I mentioned I'm downloading the website at this moment. It's quite big. I heard it's going to take me 24 hours to make the full download, so... But anyway, that's working in the background, so that's kind of slowing me down. But here, the County Committee of Safety Committee Man Handbook, okay? So this is, you know, we are the true free and independent committee men. Our founding fathers had committees of safety. They were the committee men. That's how they controlled government. That's how they worked together to do what they did. And we, too, have to do the same thing. Now, they've stolen the committeeman process from us. They statutorized it, put in party bosses, and they have total control so that they control who's actually getting on to the election through the primary, whether it's either the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. But one of the other things we'll be talking a lot about in the coming weeks, I think, is we have to get rid of parties. Parties must go. Jefferson said they must go. All our founding fathers said they should never have been. Washington already saw the problem arising and said that's going to be the downfall of America. We're going to lose everything because of these factions, these political parties. And we talk a lot about that, and you'll see that information in the video that I put together. You'll also see that information in the books, and you'll also see the information in the handbooks. Now, again, these handbooks are available for download free of charge. They're PDFs. If you want to get a handbook and purchase it, you can come under the Welcome tab and come down to Books by John Duresh. Some people like the handbooks, the pocket handbooks. I kind of like them myself. So you can purchase all these handbooks, but it's not necessary. You can also get it all for free, so you don't have to go out and spend money. We have the Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook. Okay, that's 66 pages, and this is a step-by-step process of creating and putting together your Committee of Safety. And we need to look at. There's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. We have to know the common law. We have to understand specifically and particularly the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. We must know those things, for if we don't know those things, how can we know when they're breaking their oaths? How can we know when they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing? Because I can tell you right now, Congress is doing at least 90% of what Congress does is unlawful. We did not give them the authority to do this. We did not give them the authority to debate or argue our unalienable rights, to talk about our Second Amendment or right of due process or the right of free speech. They're not to speak about that. That's none of their business. They're to be obedient. And particularly the Bill of Rights, that is the ruler by which we use to see what is lawful or not, particularly if they're abusing their powers that we've given them. You know, in Article 1, Section 8, for instance, we've empowered our legislators with 18 powers. But they seem to have taken like 100 powers, literally. They've created different government agencies that are unlawful. We didn't give them that power authority. The CIA is unlawful. The FBI is unlawful. They don't have the power or the authority to make and create those things. The Federal Reserve is unlawful. They didn't have the power or the authority. And as far as the FBI is concerned, if they were just obeying that which is lawful and dealing with the power and the authority we gave them on a federal level to exercise that police right, then that would be through the marshals. Their marshals could handle that. But anyway, there's a lot of things. But people don't realize, they don't know, because they're ignorant. I speak to myself first, of course, but I'm educating myself. I'm coming to an understanding of these things. And that's the only way we're going to be able to take control of our government. So if we start to create committees of safety and go out half-baked here, then what happens then? The next thing, you're doing the wrongdoing. You're injuring people. We're causing problems. And you know, like the saying goes, there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. And when you have a sheriff that's not under control, you got another problem. Nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. When you have congressmen and senators and other people in different various election districts elected for whatever position it is, their ignorance is nothing more dangerous than ignorance in actions. And that's why we have the problems we have today. So we must get educated. We must empower ourselves. And then we must take control of these people and bring them back under the chains of the Constitution, as Jefferson puts it. Okay, with that, I guess we're going to go take some questions. Anybody has... well, I see Terry's here. Terry, do you have the... Jan, do you have any questions for tonight?
Yeah, I have one announcement tonight, too, John.
Okay, well, before we get started, I just want to make the note. We only have one person in the queue, so people can get into the queue. It's a *6-1 if you're on the telephone. If you're on app or the browser, there should be a little button to get into the queue. Go ahead, Jan.
Okay, I'm sure you're all familiar with the Red Pill Expos. The next one is set for November 16th and 17th in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now, the Red Pill Expo has been ongoing for years. Its name and purpose were derived from the 1999 sci-fi movie The Matrix. That is, take the red pill and see the world as it really is. This particular expo's topic is the chasm, collectivism versus individualism. Now, right now, as John has been saying, and I'm sure everyone knows, people are concerned about what's going to happen after the election on November 5th, and rightfully so. None of us really have a firm grip on what will actually happen between now and New Year's. Many people are concerned about losing access to their bank accounts due to the laws that have been passed in the last few years, also the availability of food, gasoline, availability of rental cars or public transportation by air or bus, train could be vastly curtailed. I read yesterday or the day before, I believe it was, the Department of Defense announced a new directive stating that the U.S. military can now be called up and use deadly force against Americans for 72 hours without even getting DOD approval. To continue after 72 hours, approval must be obtained. Well, they tried to build, or have been trying to build for several months. They've been promoting the Red Pill Expo and so on, and it's just clear that public expectation is civil disorder. And government lockdowns following the coming elections has caused their ticket sales just to plummet far beyond what is needed for a live audience. So what they've done is... It affects both the people that are going to go and listen to the event and the people that are presenters. None of them are certain what's going to happen. So their solution that they've come up with is to remedy this problem by completely live streaming the entire event. There will be no physical event at all. The speakers and participants will all be available on live stream. Now, they're also adding one caveat, which I think is terrific. It's going to be free. You can live stream the whole thing for nothing. So I would suggest you make a list of your friends and acquaintances who you think would like to know about the Red Pill. Maybe they've heard about it and thought they would like to experience it, but never wanted to spend the money. Well, now they don't have to. They can sit at home and just live stream it. So I would encourage anyone that is interested to just go to www.redpillexpo.org and have them sign up for free to live stream the event. Now, we have a number of questions tonight, except, whoops, let me see if they disappear and reappear again.
Was that a .org or .com?
It's .org, John.
.org.
Okay, here we go. Same ship, different place. First question. Is a sheriff declaration the same as an affidavit to bring charges?
Is a sheriff what? Declaration?
Declaration the same as an affidavit to bring charges.
Well, I don't know what a sheriff declaration is. I mean, we do, we've been taught to do declaration. We do, of course, with the Committees of Safety, we creating charter and resolutions, and that is a declaration, and it really lays out what our expectations are of the people that we've elected to go into government to hold certain positions. But I don't know. I've never heard anything called a sheriff's declaration. So I don't know what that means.
Well, unfortunately, they did not define it, so I cannot help you out.
Maybe they can come back, and if they're in the room tonight, maybe they can get into the queue. And again, there's only one person in the queue, so star 6 and 1 if you're on the phone, and click the button.
You don't think they're confusing that with an information? Because you can give grand jury information or
a presentment, too.
Right.
That's what they're confusing it with. So, we can give a presentment to anybody that's in office. And what was the other one you said it would be, Gerard?
I think they call them an information.
An information. Yeah, that would be by a grand jury, of course. But we can do it. We're free and independent individuals. We can pick up and exercise that right. That's what people have to realize. Look at... It is up to us to run the courts. We don't need elected individuals making any decisions in the court. How can it be that the servant can come in and judge the master? That's not possible. The people can only be judged by the people. And the way common law works is we do hire an individual called a magistrate to put him into the court. But all judges are magistrates, and judges really are supposed to be working in equity courts. There they have the power and the authority to do what they do by making decisions and so on and so forth. And, of course, there is an appellate process through that if there's a problem. But that all has to do with commercial activity. It has to do with people working for government agencies and the government agencies in themselves. And that's where all those decisions are to be made. But in a court of law, and let's say someone had broken the law and it's a criminal thing that they're coming up against an individual who's working for a government agency, well, once it becomes a criminal situation, then it moves into a court of law, where they can, of course, impress the regulations and whatever statutes that control those individuals and apply that against them and use that in a way to win their case because they failed to do this or to do that. And, of course, that's all right. Because that's the purpose of regulations, is to control the people operating in commercial activities, to control the people that are working in different various government agencies and to hold them accountable. But at that point, they come into a court of law. There's no judge involved in that. Again, the judge puts on his magistrate cap or any other magistrate. They come into the court. And their only purpose, of course, is to act as a traffic cop, to keep things going. Make sure everything gets said that has to be said. But they can't restrain, they can't restrict, they can't do summary judgments. This is all the people's business because it's the people who are to hear the case, the 12 individuals, of course, which is the jury. And it starts off, of course, with the government or some agency or maybe the sheriff or or some other law enforcement coming in trying to get an indictment, then they have to ask the people for an indictment. So the grand jury decides, yeah, we see there's a problem here, we'll indict. And we decide what the indictment charges are. Not what they tell us what they are. We'll examine, consider, and choose what we think is right, because we are the lawmakers. That's what people have lost. They've lost the realization that we're the sovereign. We make the law. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for them, just to control them, to restrict them, to tie them down with the chains of the Constitution. So in a court of law, once the court gets going, again, the purpose of that individual sitting on up top on that desk there, you know, with the hammer and telling us, you know, as like a traffic cop, that's about it. That and to seal and pass to the sheriff with an order to exercise or execute the will that the jury just, just came up with. And the jury is supposed to not only decide the facts, but also the law and also whatever the punishment might be, with an eye on restitution. Because right now, you know, if they put a fine on someone, the state gets that money, and the poor slob that was beat up, or whatever the case may be, gets nothing. They don't get restored. Common law is about restoration. Common law is about justice. And so none of these people belong, none of these judges belong in a court of law. This is totally controlled by the people. And the only individuals that can approach a grand jury ultimately is the sheriff or the coroner. Occasionally people, but generally speaking, they take their complaint to the sheriff. And the sheriff, and the same thing with the government, if they have a complaint against someone or anybody has a complaint against someone, they got to take it to the sheriff. And the sheriff looks at the evidence and wants to see all the evidence they got, for good or for bad. And then they make the decision whether they think it should be brought before the grand jury or not. And that's the way it's supposed to be. But if you don't know that, we get what we got. We got a jury and executioner and one person sitting in that courtroom, and we allow them to do it. And we allow them to do it because we're ignorant. And that's why we're in the situation we are now. That's why we must look government by consent. Nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. Okay, back to you, Jim.
Okay, next question. I have been active in my politically one-party borough for over 20 years, and I have run against the one-party system many times. However, I bring my court case to NLA because NLA listeners may be interested in my case. In particular, I have appealed my case from local magistrate to county common pleas court to state commonwealth court, where I lost my case in state court because I did not deny specifically in my brief the charge that my wooden pallets are an eyesore. Important to note, after I appealed to the higher state court, the borough withdrew their charge and I neglected to withdraw my appeal to the higher court. Therefore, the state court had a 3-judge panel on my case, and her opinion was I did not deny the eyesore charge, even though there is nothing in a borough code about eyesore. What is NLA's opinion of my status with the court or my case in general?
Well, that is a major problem, especially with people coming into the courts that don't understand the process of due process. You got to make your case clear. You have to be very specific on your paperwork. The two most important parts of really the court case is the accusations you are making under oath through an affidavit. Okay, laying it out, being very specific, and then and the second most important thing really. Is, of course, your wherefore clause, being very specific on what exactly you're looking for. And if you're not clear on those areas, then yes, the court doesn't know what to do because they can't make it up for you. You do have to, be specific. Now, you could go, you can go back and, I don't know if you can really go back with this particular case because you probably already went out and again, is he coming in as defendant or is he coming in as plaintiff, does it say?
I think he's a defendant because they cited him for his pallets.
Okay. All right.
So they sucked him into court, and he's fighting that.
All right. So he's coming in from the defendant's perspective. So he's got to defend himself. And if he can, he can make himself a plaintiff. But that's going to be hard, number one. Number two, it sounds like it's a code situation. So it's a violation of some code. You know, throw a top over it to begin with. Maybe that's helpful. But in any event, codes are unlawful to be applied upon people. So it seems that it escalated from there. And I think, what court did he start out in? I know he went through a series of different courts.
Well, town court. The lower.
Okay, so he went into the town court. And again, you know, when you take it, if you're in a town court, your best thing to do is to challenge the jurisdiction. And once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. And I can assure you, they do not have jurisdiction over you. Town courts can only rule on things that affect particularly, usually, like traffic or commercial activities. Not our traffic, not what we do, but what commercial activities are doing. So they can enforce codes and different things in commercial, but they cannot enforce it upon the people. You know, there really is no such thing, as where some people may not like this idea, but, you know, hey, you can do whatever you want to do on your property. What the heck is an eyesore? To one person, it might be an eyesore. To another person, it may not be a big deal. But nevertheless, they can't apply these things, these different statutes upon the people. It's called civil law, you know, which really leads back to Babylon. You know, it was Babylonian law to begin with. Then it was repackaged in Justinian law. Then it was repackaged again in Roman law. And then it's been repackaged again in municipality law, which ultimately it's always been municipality law, the control of the people of the city. And it's just people making statutes. And common law is clear. We're not to be held by the laws of men. We only be held up for the laws of God. Okay, so anyway, the only thing you could do is redo the case and bring it in for a challenge of jurisdiction.
Well, you said they called it clutter, but there's no code that defines clutter. They just made it up.
Well,
so it's not even a statute, really.
Yeah, I agree.
They got problems there with that, I think.
Well, I would agree with you, Gerard, absolutely. So anyway, I don't think you can resurrect this case very easily because you've already so many different processes. Although you can go back in and plead ignorance to them and ask them sort of reconsideration to start all over again from first base. That's what I would do. And I would shut them all down. And you could still shut them down. You can shut them down by, again, challenging jurisdiction, moving into state court for cause. And if they don't back you up and take care of business, you can move it into federal court because it is a violation of an unalienable right, and that is the key, and it's the only way you can bring anything into court. And you never have to argue the particular charges they put upon you because, again, they got to prove they have jurisdiction before they do it. And that is an art in itself and a realization on how they work with that because immediately the judge in that little courtroom is going to say, well, I decided we have jurisdiction, so let's move on. And then you have to be bold enough to object to that and say, wait a second, how can you do that? You know, I wrote an affidavit, unrebutted, rules the court. It was not rebutted. Your prosecutor didn't do anything. There's no paper before the court. So how could you possibly rule outside of my will because I put an affidavit in and that rules this court, and that's the only thing you can consider. So again, this case must be decided whether you have jurisdiction or not, and clearly you can't make that decision. So we need another individual to come in here and make that decision to clarify it, and they need to make that decision on our behalf because we laid out the law. And we put this information together under Education Starts Here. You come down to law, and you come over to court forms and process, and we teach you how to challenge jurisdiction. We teach you how to move it into the different courts. And if you don't know how to write papers, you don't know the process, how due process works, how the courts are, how they're structured, and the proper paperwork that you have to go through, and how things work, Well, then you're going to have to go learn the law. And we give a course, of course, on that under Education Starts Here. We have a court access in the common law course, so you can get a good education here. But one of the most important thing, and it takes the most time, really, is to learn how to write. I mean, I look back at my writing in the beginning, and it was very childish looking in a sense that, you know, from my perspective, I look at it, it was childish. I didn't have knowledge, you know, but I was working at it. I was coming up through the School of Hard Knocks, and which is the best school to go to, by the way. And as time went on, you know, I learned how to speak and how to write. I've read other people's cases, particularly people who will take a position in common law. I've read Supreme Court cases. I see the way they talk and the way they write. And of course, you know, I through research and putting together for this course, you know, I've learned the structure of the court, the structure of paperwork, how the process works, how to move it along. You got to move your case along. Otherwise, it'll sit there and ferment and just die if you're not moving it. And again, that's usually if you're the plaintiff. If you're the defendant, they're moving it. Trust me, because they're looking for their dollars. Because that's what it's all about. They got to maintain and keep you in that statutory prison and keep soaking whatever they can get out of you, because that's what they do. I recently went into a courtroom with someone to help someone who was talking with the prosecutor prior to. I told them I was a lawyer, but then I also let it be. And I was getting respect, but then I mentioned, but by the way, I'm not a bar, you know, I'm not a member of the bar, so. But the whole thing changed. Cold. They just turned cold, okay, because I'm not one of them, all right? But that's what we're up against in these courts. And I do believe we're going to be correcting that very, very soon. For those who may not know, hopefully many people have looked at this paper. This is our final paper written by the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and it was directed to the United States Supreme Court. It's a presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court. It was filed, I believe it was on the 10th of this month, so it was about 10 days ago. And it went to a lot of different people. Now, reading this case alone will teach you how to write. And, you know, and we got lots and lots of cases. I mean, if you come up to hear federal court cases, and you can read action against YouTube, action against the judiciary, and the grand jury paperwork, the grand jury docket. I mean, that page alone, the docket, goodness, we have huge amounts of papers that we've written over quite a long period of time, making our case, proven that there is a conspiracy in the federal judiciary and also in the state judiciaries too. But we're focused in on the federal, because once we take the federal back, then we can get the order of the federal down to the state to obey the Constitution. And we can use that power. So we're looking to remove every single federal judge on the federal judiciary, okay, which is, I don't know what the number of judges are. I'm sure it's in the thousands. But in any event, they got to go because they're all guilty of subversion. They've destroyed our courts of law. They've closed our courts of justice. They've closed the doors of the courts of justice. They put people in jail that don't belong in jail. They've destroyed families, the family courts especially. They've destroyed our children. The list, it goes on and on, all the evil that they have done. Now, of course, that most of that is the children's stuff is in the state courts. But again, we have to win back that federal court. Win the federal court, we take back every state court in America. And then we open up the courts of justice. And that's what NLA had designed. Not that we figured that out necessarily as we were working through this. Well, actually, we did figure it out as we were working through this. We didn't start off knowing where we wanted to end and how to get there. We had to learn what it is we have to do, where can we get to get justice, and how are we going to do that. And this paper that we had written, okay, here, again, going back, this is, again, a grand jury presentment to the United States Supreme Court. Basically, this is a national emergency. It's an extraordinary presentment and an order, okay, and an extraordinary indictment upon the federal judiciary. And we did copy quite a few people here. We also copied quite a bit for enforcement. And a lot of individuals, really, to hopefully get these people on our side. These are all good people that I've been listening to on different various, like CNN or something. For instance, the Senate, approving or disapproving judges that are coming up and really talking about the problems. So these are a lot of good people that I think hopefully you'll assist us and help us. So, you got to learn to really be very specific on the issue. Just the facts. No, don't get lost in stories, because stories just create fog and smoke and the case gets lost. So you got to stay focused, keep it simple. You say the maximum amount and the minimum amount of words. And whenever you write, you get a paragraph written, you go back and massage that paragraph. Maybe it's 10 sentences, and you massage it, get it down to 9 or 8 or 7. And you use different words, different phrases. But you make it the most powerful that you can, on the one hand, but being with minimum words as possible. And I like to write a lot with memorandums. I'll make my points, make my statements, quote a law or something, and refer to a memorandum which will expound on something, maybe many pages. But this keeps your paper that you're going into the court with, it keeps it very clean and focused on exactly what your case is about. So, yeah, you lost that case because you did make an error. You wasn't clear with the points that needed to be made. And I have no idea what your wherefore clause ended up to be. But again, when you're moving it from a town court, you really should be challenging jurisdictions. Okay, next question.
The next question is, have you heard of David Jose or Jaron Jackson and the success that they're having filing notices of affidavit with other patriots using maxims and constitutional law or the law of the land, a.k.a. due process? If you haven't, they give a video link of some work that David Jose did showing his work on getting Neil Gorsuch to start teaching lower courts and calling out for the wrongdoings. You interested in that, John? I can send you the link.
Yeah, send me the link. I did see that, and I did kind of click on that and kind of reviewed it a little bit. I think maybe I should look at it a little deeper to see if there's anything that we can glean from them. One of the problems I found, and we found this in the very beginning, where we would listen to people who seemed to be sounding like they knew what they were talking about, and making, claims of success, great, grandiose claims of success. And as time goes on, we find out that they haven't really had that much success. We're honest with the people. Our success is practically nothing. I mean, we've had a couple of cases out of hundreds of cases that we've been successful on. I know in my own personal cases, I had a huge success against the IRS, and that was really, I had to go back to figure out how it was that I won that case, because I did make three positions. But in any event, a lot of people claim a lot of things and they exaggerate. They win one case and they talk as if they've got 1,000 cases under their belt that they've won. So I'm always leery about that. The other thing is I find people get lost on the law in itself. They take things a little bit they move away a little bit from what's truthfully the situation. I mean, you have to write very specifically, and you have to be very careful in how you write and put things together. And when you make a claim of something to be a law or a fact, well, you got to back that up. You just can't make the claim. You got to back it up. You got to have footnotes. If anybody reading the books that we put out or the papers we put out, we're footnote heavy. I mean, really footnote heavy. Some pages in the book might have half a page of footnotes on it. And it's extremely important, because you've proven your point as you're going along. It becomes rock solid. They can't defend against it. Okay? The only thing they could do is throw us out of the court, and that usually is what they do. They throw us out under Rule 12, and they just make it up as they go. And even the way they throw it out is unlawful. But again, you know, we need to look in to see. These people might have something there, and if they do, maybe we can work together, or at least maybe we can glean some things off of them. So yeah, Jan, send that to me, because I did delete that, and I just kind of reviewed through quickly, and I should have paid a little more closer attention.
Okay. Next question. Are hard money loans the same as banks giving you a loan, a promissory note? And does a hard money loan use your birth certificate to receive the funds to fund your loan like the bank, so they are regulated under security exchange laws?
Okay, so a hard money loan, I presume, is money being brought up by investors or individuals or companies or whatever, some kind of an organization putting up the money. Whereas when you go to a bank, quite often, more than not, you know, you're really working through the Fed window, especially if it's a mortgage. Okay, I don't know about other loans. They may not go through the Fed window. I've never looked into that. But we do know the mortgages do. And if it goes through the Fed window, then because of the way they set things up for the Organic Act of 1871 and that which they built upon that, okay, really working us out as chattel, but giving some benefits to us animals, you know, us being the livestock, okay, because they sell us. When we die, they sell us. They sell us every time you turn around. And if you go try to connect and correct off your SESQ accounts, you'll find yourself in jail quite quickly. That I know for a fact. But they apparently give us some benefits, okay? So you can kind of execute those benefits. The benefit you're getting is the fact that once you go to the Fed window and you get the money, you know you don't owe anybody anything. You know, the banks send you a booklet of payments, and they want you to pay, and if you don't pay, they're going to foreclose on you. They give you the threatening with that, and they charge you interest, and they make a fortune. And yet they have no skin in the game. They didn't put the money out. They took the money from the Fed window. They were only the connection. They made the connection as a contract to make that connection with the Fed window. They get their half a point or 1 point or whatever it might be, depending on the size of the loan or what it's for. They get their point, and that's it. They're done. Yet they go and collect. And then, of course, that collection of that money, it gets really spread out. But again, the deal was SESQ accounts and money through the Fed window is a way from getting some monies from your SESQ account, and that was kind of a carrot, okay, back when they were putting this together. Like it meant anything, as they were enslaving us. These people betrayed us, okay, and they sold us as slaves, literally. And that's where we're at. They own us, so they think. Of course, the whole thing's a fraud, and that's the position we take, and that's how we write our papers with that in mind. So, all right, next.
I have a friend in Des Moines County Correctional Center. He is seeking reading material, but it must come directly from a business and not a living man. The material you offer is the material he needs to start reading. I would do anything to help him get out. What could be a better way to help him than for him to learn this? He has a lot of time on his hands, and he could learn a lot from your books alone, which I have read, by the way. I pulled your book, Meet Your Straw Man, off the bookshelf to get your web address. Could you send him your books, please? I have to ask. The worst you could say is no, but I hope you will say yes. If you have any other ideas of how we can get him books and so on, please let me know.
Well, a couple of things. You know, people who are their friends, this person's friends, I presume the person's in jail. Am I correct on that?
I didn't get your last three words, John.
The person's incarcerated, right?
Yes, he's in the correctional center, Des Moines County.
Right. I mean, look at, you know, we're looking for money. We can't put money out. We're barely surviving. And, you know, so next friends, people who are friends, can go out and buy the books for them, and they're not expensive. I'd put these books as cheap as possible. I mean,
yeah,
let's just take a quick look. Yeah, yeah.
It has to come. The material has to come from a business, not a person.
Oh, okay. Well, then they can list out the books they want, and figure out the monies and send it into National Liberty Alliance, and National Liberty Alliance will, you know, purchase those books on their behalf and send it on their behalf. Or they can purchase it and send it to us, and then we'll send it to them, however they want to do that. But generally speaking, the books we sell, for instance, Government by Consent is a huge book, okay? This book is 550 pages, and it's an 8.5 by 11 book, okay? So, and we charge, what do we charge? $39.95. It's a hardcover, okay? We're selling this book cheaper than my publisher is selling my paperback. You know, we have a paperback book, and it you know, it's the same book, okay? But it's a paperback, and if you use it a lot, you know, it does kind of fall apart. Any paperback will. Hardcover books last a heck of a lot longer. But the paperback is going for, I think it's $49. And this is, well, maybe it's 45, I think it's $49, yeah. $49.95. This is $39.95, so it's $10 cheaper. And again, even the other book was kind of, I tried to get that as low as I could, but that price was controlled by my publisher. These books here, I published and went through Amazon, selling it through Amazon Books. And so I have much more control over the price. But I'll tell you what, anybody who will purchase a book like this, and the other book, again, is we have Court Access in the Common Law. And again, that particular book is the same situation. Whereas, let me open that page up, it's 550 pages, which is a max out, by the way. That's the maximum you can do on an 8.5-inch book. Hardcover, at least that's what Amazon will do, their maximum. I'm sure there are publishers that will make them, that will sell them thicker books. But again, these are law books, okay? And again, this one is Court Access in the Common Law, same price, $39.95, 8.5, 12-point leading, and it's 548 pages, 550 is the maximum. The binding is a hardcover, it's full cover. Full color cover. It's really a pretty book, but it's a book that'll endure because really they need to be used as a reference book. I wrote them with that in mind, and that's why I went hardcover and put it as cheap as I could. So we don't make much money on it. But the bottom line is that these books here by anybody else selling law books, you $150-$200 for this kind of a book in this area, being the law. And being a hardcover with that much information in it. So it's reasonably cheap. But NLA, if you figure out the books you want and add up the prices, make a list, send it to me, send it to, send it to mail, mail at nationallibertyalliance.org. If I miss it, I'm sure someone will remind me because a lot of people get that mail. And then we'll work something out where you can pay for the books. We'll get them and mail them. So, but we can't. You know, I get a lot of people from prison not calling, but writing letters, and asking for a lot of things. And first of all, I can't even keep up with the letters. I don't have the time to keep up with the letters. We're not professional here. We'd like to go professional, so we don't have the help. And a lot of their letters are lengthy, asking for things. And again, we don't have the money to be able to fulfill those kind of things. Next question.
This is another one on the sheriff declaration, and they want to know if it needs a wet ink signature.
Again, I don't know what a sheriff's declaration is. Again, if it's what Gerard suggests it might be or whatever. It sounds like something, if you do a presentment, it's got to come from the grand jury. It could come, let me think about this, potentially speaking, it could come from a committee of safety too. You know, there's the power of the writs. The power of the writs are the power of the people. They've robbed us from that. They actually have a rule that has abrogated the writs, that is the right of the king, the writ mandamus, the writ of habeas corpus, the writ quo warranto, and so on. These are all writs that's available to the power and the authority of the people themselves, because we're the kings, you know, we're the sovereigns. And yet they made a rule to do away with that. You know, their rules are acted upon as if they're law, and they're not. First of all, it's all unlawful anyway. Second of all, it's not in harmony with the common law. Even equity has to be in harmony with common law. It has to be just. And but they do whatever they want. So. But again, I think the person maybe could either get into the queue or maybe rewrite those questions, being more specific, and maybe we can be more specific.
I think the prosecutors do information to the grand jury on stuff that they have information on that they want them to investigate. That they send an information to the grand jury.
Well, that's true. But there's no grand jury out there other than the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And we're focused in on enemies, foreign and domestic, particularly within the three branches of government and on a federal level. So that's where our focus is. We do things where people can attach cases to us. If you want to do something like that, you can go in and click on, under today's issues, stuck in an abusive court, click on that tab. Or you'll find us on the right-hand side here, stuck in an abusive court. And just read this information on how you can attach your case to ours. Now, we're doing it for leverage. Remember, any case you have that you're really looking to resurrect that case, well, you'll have to fight that case and battle that case, but you'll be in a court of justice, and that's the key thing. That's what we're trying to get to. And so it's helpful. And we don't charge nothing for anyone to send in an affidavit to attach their case. But you have to be very, you have to follow the instructions here. So read through it carefully. And if you know, if you give us too much information and don't follow the procedure that we laid out, it's not going to get attached, because it has to be focused, it has to be short, and it's really just an affidavit. Even in the affidavit, you know, you can refer to your case number, which, of course, if you do have a case, you do want to refer to your case number. But you read through here, and you click on the form and filing an affidavit, and it must be a PDF file. So you download the affidavit form right here in a DocX. Okay, let's see if it opens up here. Come on. Again, my computer is real slow today because it's working behind the scenes, downloading our website. Here it is. Okay. So basically, if you have a court case, if there is a court case, do not attach. Just fill in the following: case number, court name, judge, and the court address. And then your affidavit. Keep it short, focused on the facts. Then get it notarized. It must be in PDF form. You got to mail it to where we say to mail it. What do we do it? To intake at govbyconsent.org. And then we'll put an attachment on it to try to leverage it into the court. People who've lost their homes, you know, through non-judicial foreclosures, whether it be tax or mortgage, you know, you need to get restored because they stole it from you. All of that was unlawful to begin with. So, all right. Any other questions, Jan?
About four more.
Okay.
Can health and safety codes be applied to the people? Example, possession of substances or paraphernalia.
Well, again, you know, it's none of their business. I guess you're doing that for recreation, or you're doing that for pain, or it's none of their business. So, you know, you should be able to go out and buy that. You know, I know here in New York, you could buy pot now, and they actually have stores. It's real cheap. Buy it in a store, and it, you know, and so it's lawful. And I know a lot of places are doing. A lot of states are doing that, I think. Look, if people want to put a needle in their arm, I mean, hey, you know, we try to tell them not to, but you know, you shouldn't be able to be arrested for that. Now, selling it is a different story. You know, if you're out there, that falls into commercial activities, okay? And commercial activities must adhere to the statutes and regulations laid out in order to for you to exercise that business. And so if you're not going through your license and all that stuff that's necessary for the business and collecting the sales tax and whatever else the case may be, you're going to be liable for that, absolutely. But as a person who's using something, okay, that's their business. Not that they should do it. I mean, it's not a good idea to do drugs. I mean, you know, a little pot for pain or something in the evening, you know, it's like a little wine or something for pain or something. Well, that's I can appreciate that. So, but anyway. Okay, any other questions?
Yeah, next question. If a court or a trial court denies due process, instead of going through the appeal, you suggest it's best to do a counterattack, collateral attack, excuse me, on that court. Should anything more be filed into that court or go directly into the collateral attack?
Read the first part, the first couple of sentences again.
If a trial court denies due process.
Okay, that's it. That's all I need to know. Okay, first of all trial courts today are unlawful. They're in jurisdictions unknown. You can make a challenge, not that you're going to win on it. You'll have a better chance, of course, challenging on the lower courts. I did recently a case for myself in the lower courts, challenged the jurisdiction, went through the process, moved it into state court, and won because they couldn't prove the jurisdiction, and they didn't even answer because they couldn't answer, okay? Now, again, there's a lot of paperwork up here for that purpose. So if they don't have jurisdiction, they don't have the authority to bring a trial together. That's the end of that thing. The other thing, you know, look at, if you're going to a trial court and they're charging you with something, well, that makes it a criminal thing. And if it's a criminal thing, there's got to be an indictment. Again, they don't do that either anymore these days. I mean, sometimes they do, but a lot of times they don't, especially on the lower courts. You know, people go to jail from town courts and village courts and city courts, and yet there is no indictment. There is no real trial by jury. More often than not, it's just the quote-unquote judge up there that is acting as judge, jury, and executioner. And all of that is unlawful. It's against the law, which is natural law. But again, people can come to these court forms here that we put together, okay, and get some information, demand for oath and bond, the common law trust. Let's see, instructions and forms for traffic court, instruction and forms to challenge jurisdiction, instruction and forms to move your case for cause. It could be to a state court from the lower court, or it could be a federal court. And you go and fight in jurisdiction because they don't have it, and they can't prove it. But again, doesn't mean you're going to win because these people don't care, and they make the law up as they go. But any case you lose that is just and right, remember, you can resurrect that on the other side of devolution, which is in 2025. So it's not that you're wasting your time at this point in time, but again, then you can go and these people that are denying you due process right up the line, who refuse to hear your case because in a court of justice, well, then you can sue them too for denial of process. Okay, next.
Okay. Do the DAs generally take an oath when in office, or are they usually without authority in bringing charges?
Every court officer takes an oath. Every person who is elected takes an oath. Any person who is appointed takes an oath. Not that they adhere to that oath, not that they even understand that oath. They're cold-hearted orbs. That's what they are, just cold-hearted. I mentioned a little while ago about a case I went in. They would treat me with all kinds of respect, calling me counselor and everything, and I reminded them, hey, but I'm not a bar attorney. I'm cold as ice at that point, disrespectful. Who are these people? Who the heck are these people? Who do they think they are? You know, I got a list of people I'm going after. Once we get onto the other side of devolution, I've been putting court cases in for a long time. I'm talking personal cases. And And more often than not, of course, they throw you out. And I intend on getting justice from these people at some point in time, if I have the time.
Okay. This last is kind of a statement almost. It says, I wanted a link for NLA to share with its members or listeners. It's called the Commoner Law Group, and it's at www.commonerlaw.com. And also there's a Rumble channel, which is Commoner Law Group, that posts videos of monthly meetings called the Free Traveler Monthly Confab. Now, John says NLA is always looking for an opportunity to interview, and I think this would be a good source to link up with. Much discussion of common law with emphasis on the right to travel with success stories. It would be nice if John were to place this link on NLA's website.
Okay, so it's Commoner, C-O-M-O-N-E-R?
Yeah.
L-A-W.com?
Yeah.
Well, we'll take a look at it. Look, we want to be very careful who we might lift up and put on our website. You know, they have to be following things correctly, you know, at least from our perspective, as best that I can appreciate it. We don't want to send people to places where they're being suckered, particularly. You know, we get a lot of stories out there, a lot of people claiming all kinds of things, you know, and, you know, we've fallen into a trap or two here or there over the years with some of these people. And so we've got to be careful. Besides that, I don't know that anybody has a better place of learning common law and court procedure and process and jurisdiction than National Liberty Alliance. I mean, I don't know anybody who's got more than what we have. And this is all highly researched and put together. You know, it's not that we're creating it off the cuff or following some lawyer. No, we've researched all these things, and you'll find everything we do is with you know, footnotes. So we've got lots of instructions, lots of forms. We teach a law course. We teach all kinds of courses. We've got a foundational study. We've got introduction, constitutional course 101 introduction. We've got a free civics course. We have government by consent course. We've got a militia course. We have a jury administrative course, and of course we have the course Court Access and the Common Law. So we're pretty intense and extensive. You know, we've really got a lot going on up here. We also have a greater education than that. You know, if you come down our educational tab, we get into the Bible very deeply for those who are interested in doing that. Of course, our courses, we've got lectures and papers. We've got the Federalist Papers. We have founding fathers on political parties. We've got the founding documents. We've got biographies. We've got the book, 5,000 Year Leap. If you haven't read that, you got to go read that. And we have that not only in PDF form by permission, we also have it in MP3 by permission, so you can download it and listen to it and read it at the same time. A really, really powerful book. Those people also, that's put out by the CCNS.net, and they have a lot of great books. They've got the real Thomas Jefferson, the real George Washington, the real Benjamin Franklin, and it goes back to documentation of who these people are, coming to understand who they are through their speeches, their communications, their letters between themselves, their writings, the Federalist Papers. I mean, all this stuff we have up here, you know, and we have articles and essays. We have trial by jury. We have all kinds of stuff in here, educational videos. Again, we just put 4 or 5 pages up recently. We have a lot more than that, okay? And then, of course, we have a law page where we give some strategies of the basic things that people come to all the time, like traffic court or code violations. I mean, you know, and again, but I'll look into them, and if they're powerful, I'll put them up. But, you know, again, why do you want to go there when you have National Liberty Alliance, which what I believe is the most powerful source of information on the law, the common law, that you can find anywhere? I don't know anybody's got anything like this anywhere. So, and if you do know of anybody, let me know, because we should connect with them. Okay, next question.
That's all the questions, John.
All right. Gerard, you want to take the mic for a while?
Sure.
Okay, I'll be in the background. Maybe I'll comment a little here, too.
Okay. You know,
wait, before you go, I just want to make the announcement. We only got two people in the queue. If you're on the phone and you want to have a question, a comment, or a correction to offer us, *6 and 1 if you're on the phone. And if you got an app or a browser, there should be a little button to enter the queue. All right, you got it, Gerard.
I just wanted to say that we were talking about committees of safety earlier and starting them and how you go about them and, you know, how each one's a little different depending on what you run into. And you will run into different situations depending on your county and the people that are in it and running it. I did a little stint in town government, and I got a real good education about how it was run. Now, not all of it was bad. Some of it, I was surprised how good it was. They gave everybody that came in this little book, and they call it the Town Law Manual. And what they did is they went through and they updated the laws that towns have control over. And I learned a lot because they said things like, once a town makes a law, And it gets sent up to the legislature. They have a group there that makes sure that it passes constitutional muster. So once they make sure that it conveys to the Constitution, that law in the town has the same force and power as if the state legislator made it. So that's where they draw their authority through. The other thing was in that manual I discovered. They talked about oaths of office and how if the person didn't take the oath of office, he never filled the office. The office is empty. And they even had a procedure that you could come in and take over the office if the person drug his feet doing that. I mean, I was surprised that this is State of New York putting this book out. And they used to keep it very close to the press.
Gerard, where is this book? Is it downloadable?
No, they didn't want anybody to have it, John. I have a copy. I'm going to...
Is it a PDF copy?
No. It's a paperback, and they renew them every year. They're in every town. If you know somebody that's in town government, you can get one. There's nothing the government prints that we should not be able to get. That's what's mine.
If you can get me a copy of the book, I'll break the back of the book and then create PDFs out of it and post it up. I'd like to look at that because I am interested in understanding different ways of filling positions by.
It has so much information that I never knew. Like we had a problem with a clerk that was abusing grant funds, and nobody in the, very, very staunch Republican county and town and everything here, and they didn't want to go after a Republican. She was a Republican, but I was a Republican, and blah, blah, blah. And so I committed the cardinal sin by calling her out. But what we found out is when we were reading that town law manual, is that as a town board, we could set a court up. We could do a tribunal, and we could do it just like when Congress does a hearing. Town board can do the same thing. We can make accusations. We can call witnesses, and we did that. And that's the one thing that really helped, because even though we might not, I mean, there's no authority to really. I mean, we could subpoena. But we didn't have any arresting authority or anything like that. But when you call somebody on the carpet, some of the most important things that you can do is ask them questions that they're supposed to have answers to, and they don't have the answers. Because a lot of times, the people don't even know this stuff. So then when you get them sitting there, and we're doing kind of a trial in public with the rest of the town there, and you're asking them questions about the grant and what they're doing, and they can't answer that, they're hanging themselves. So I found it to be very powerful, and it had a lot of good information. I think, and now what I was thinking is, when you're starting a committee of safety, you're getting into town government. And if you don't know the procedures and the due process and what's supposed to be done, like if you don't know that everybody has to take a new oath of office every time the position renews itself, when you go out and talk to the sheriff and this one and that one, you find out that there was no oath of office, very easy to deal with. That guy's not holding the office. You don't have any trouble getting rid of him because the state actually acknowledges that. You know what I mean? They're not allowed to do that. So, so as you go into the town and you meet your sheriff and, you want to take, and maybe you should have somebody else check for his oath and bonds. maybe not the guy that's meeting him, but somebody else could do that, you know what I mean? Just so you know where everybody is sitting in the county and how much stuff they're doing right and how much they're doing wrong. And you're going to run into all kinds of stuff because it's gotten so sloppy through the years, nobody gives a crap anymore, you know? But all those laws are still on the books, and all you got to do is enforce them. And when
How many pages is that? Is that a handbook or a small handbook or what is
it? It's probably about you know, it's like 8 by not quite 11, 11 by 8.
So it's a full size, like a sheet, a copy sheet.
A little smaller than a copy sheet, a little smaller than letter size, right. And it's probably like 200 pages.
Well, that's quite a bit. I really need a copy of that book. You got to give me a copy.
It breaks everything down in the glossary. Very handy, you know. And I was thinking about that. I meant to find out who was publishing them, and they don't want to give them to the public. But you know what? I don't see how they can refuse us. If they're going to hand that out to your public officials, I think under Freedom of Information, they got to give it to us too.
Well, again, you know, if they don't, we need to try to get a copy somewhere, and I will, I'll put it together at a PDF. I'll run it through.
Of course, my copy is older. It's probably 8 years old or more, right? But it doesn't.
Yeah, but I doubt anything much changed in that. I mean, maybe a little.
Well, they do changes every year a little bit. You know what I mean, to different things, but you still get the gist.
How did you get that copy? Did you get it through the town when you were working there, or what?
Everybody gets one that's elected.
Do you know anybody in that can get you a copy of one?
I know lots of people. I'm sure I can harangue one up, you know.
So will you mail it to me on Wednesday or Thursday?
You're dreaming.
I really want
to. I can email you something by Wednesday or Thursday, but as far as putting the stamp and putting it in the mail, that's tough.
I want to really because I'm weak on that area of the law for removal of office. I know we can remove them with a writ quo warranto. We can remove anyone from office with that, ultimately. But then, you know, the process of seizing and what they have written up for seizing the seat that you've removed these people. Now, we know we could do that with the boards, town boards, village boards, school boards, you know, basically with that. Legislators, it's going to be a little different on that. But if they don't have an oath, then, we should be able to do it with a writ quo warranto. And 3 days, they're out. Either fix the problem or take a hike, leave town, you know?
Well, every 4 years, that book gets renewed because it goes to the new, you know, the town government changes the supervisors every 2 years and town boards every 4 years, and everybody gets a book.
Okay, now, look, I'll compromise. Can you get it to me by Friday or Monday?
Yeah. The other thing is I would like to see I'd like to see my old book. I hope I still have it here. I'd like, because they may have taken that out, because I thought that was pretty radical about, you know, removing someone.
Well, if you can't get a book and you find the old book, then, you know, if you don't mind giving that up for me to create a PDF and get it up online.
Yeah, well,
I want to read it.
It memorializes it for me, too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'll work on that. I think it's important, and I think your committees of safety need to be educated.
Absolutely, absolutely. Look at, you know, with the committee of safety that I just structured here in Dutchess County, and I'm not taking a seat as a chairman or anything like that. I'm just a member. But I'm an educator for them, of course. But I'm trying to educate people who become educators for that committee of safety. And we have, like, about 10 people that are really interested in the law. They actually meet once a week to discuss the law. And so we're kind of in a really good situation. We have people which have a good deal of knowledge. I think they have some problems that hopefully we can correct. You know, correction is grievous to those who've forsaken the way, but many people don't like that correction. But if they're going to receive the correction because certain things they shouldn't be doing because they've been taught wrong, you know, like I said, there's a lot of people out there teaching a lot of stuff that is more damaging than anything else, okay? So we got to be careful, and we have to, you know, we have to verify anything we learn. And even with National Liberty Alliance, you should be questioning everything. You know, Thomas Jefferson, who was a devout believer in Jesus Christ, said that you should question everything, even the existence of God. And I agree with that, because if you're going to question the existence of God and you're really honest with it, then you're going to look to see if there is a God, and you will find him between the books of Genesis and Revelations. So, you know, we got to step ahead in the fact that we're a Christian nation and the Bible is everywhere. But, you know, we're in a good position is what I'm trying to say. So we're going to have a law group inside of the committees of say, and I think a lot of these people are going to take the positions of jury administrators because... you know, they're faceted for that at this point right now. And every committee of safety should have a group that's focusing in on the law. They're under what's called the Judiciary Committee, you know. But yes. Back to you. We got people in the queue.
Okay.
One
more thing I was going to say. You know, according to U.S. versus William, the grand jury has the authority to investigate anything, you know, if it's on a town or county or whatever like that.
And the writs give us the power to remove them from office within 3 days.
But the prosecutors think that they're God, and they are in a certain sense. And I think when they do an information, that kind of takes from the grand jury. The grand jury should be doing those. Somebody, even if the prosecutor brings them the knowledge of a crime. The grand jury really should investigate it. If they need some police work, then they call the sheriff. And the sheriff's department around here, they all have what they call investigators.
We have to get rid of the bar, so that they got to go. And anybody who is a bar member is not permitted to come into a court of law to practice anything unless they leave that bar. And then they have to learn the Constitution also, because they don't seem to know that either. The Bill of Rights, they don't seem to know that, okay? But they have to learn...
That's why they don't want the grand juries to investigate anything, because then they end up with a runaway grand jury that they can't control.
And then they end up in handcuffs and in jail.
Yeah, right, exactly. So anyway, that's just things that you need to keep in your mind as you're putting these stuff together, because, listen, you're going to open up cans of worms as you go through this, no doubt.
Okay, look, it next Tuesday or Wednesday, okay?
Yeah, okay.
I need that book.
I should have said it.
It's a piece that I don't have right now, and I really want that knowledge. You know?
Right, right.
Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna open Gene up. Gene is, I think it says OR, I guess that's Oregon. Let me hit next question and see if it comes up. It never works for me. What the heck?
You just hit next question once.
I did.
Don't touch nothing else. Just wait.
It didn't do anything.
Just wait.
See, he says, is Gene or O.R. the next guy for you?
That's the first person. Let me try, okay? Let me see if I can get it. Hang on a second. Okay, there you go. One click did it.
Show off.
Oh,
okay, go ahead, Gene.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hey, this is Gene in Oregon. Hey, I have some quick questions. Traffic issue. I'm using the form to... challenge jurisdiction. I called and asked who the prosecutor was. They told me that the state of Oregon was the prosecutor and the officer who wrote the ticket is the plaintiff. So whose name do I put the plaintiff in there under respondent?
No, jurisdiction. That's what you want to do. Go ahead, Gerard.
I've never heard that they actually said that the officer is the plaintiff.
Yeah,
he's,
so I asked.
He's an employee. He can't even be. He can't be an injured party.
If he's the plaintiff, that's exactly it. He'd have to be the injured party. How was he injured?
Yeah, I mean, I would like. They actually told you that.
Yeah, and I asked a couple.
And they
times,
put it in writing, besides.
So,
did they just tell you that, or did they give you some kind of document that laid that out?
I called in because I'm trying to put down the name of the prosecutor as the respondent, correct?
No. What do you? Well, yes and no. It's the court that you're challenging, and you send it to the prosecutor, who is an officer of the court, who is to answer
for. Up in the left-hand corner, I'm the petitioner versus the respondent, correct?
Well, no, you're not necessarily the petitioner. What are they calling you? They're calling you a defendant, right?
I'm looking at the example of the paperwork that you gave me.
Okay, well, what you want to do, first of all, you want to come in with a special appearance, and you want to make that appearance. Now, I updated the paperwork, so there has been some changes, and I made it more powerful, and, you know, as time goes on, you find little things you can correct here or there. But what's up right now should be the latest. So if you're going to go into court and you're going to challenge jurisdiction, I presume, right?
Yes. I'm just the paper, the actual paper. So I downloaded it like 2 days ago. And up in that box in the left-hand corner, there's petitioner against respondent.
Okay, now which paper did you download? The traffic court or
verified jurisdiction challenge?
Jurisdiction challenge. So you hit the show cause for jurisdiction, I presume. And you got petitioner responded. Yeah, you know, I should change that. Maybe not. No, petitioner and respondent would be good. And the respondent would be the county district attorney, the prosecutor, whoever it is, you know. That's who that should be. Petitioner is okay because you are petitioning the court for a verified show cause for a denial of jurisdiction. But again, what I would do, I did do something which is more powerful than this, in my opinion, and you can use it for any kind of a case within a town court, village court, or a city court. With the exception in here in New York, New York City courts are called courts of record. So they've given them certain powers above, and that is in our Constitution. But what you really want to go to is the traffic court. But remember, whatever you're designing your case around, you got a lot of changes to make, but the structure is there. Okay, so let me find the instruction here, the traffic court. First of all...
Okay, it's actually circuit court. And I went and looked, and the Oregon Constitution, powers invested in the judiciary, define a circuit court as a court of record.
Okay, because they call it a court of record doesn't mean it is a court of record. Let me ask you a couple of questions, and I'll tell you if it's a court of record. What is the charges? Is it criminal charges?
No, it's some offense, some ORS 806-whatever.
Oh, okay, so they're applying some kind of statute, some kind of code violation.
Well, that was my second question. We're kind of jumping the gun here, and
I'm trying to give you an updated paper. I probably should go up here and update that other section. It just takes time to do, but what I'm trying to say to you is this here, the instructions and forms for a traffic court can be used for any code violation, any statute they're applying upon you, even a criminal thing. And then you have to discover, well, okay, are they really a court of record? If they're a court of record, then they have to have an indictment, okay? If they're applying a statute against you, well, where's the indictment? Well, there is no indictment. We don't do indictment. Well, then it's not a court of record, okay? That's number one, all right? Number two, the jury. And is it a 12-man jury or is it a 6-man jury, okay? That's another thing. And if they're putting statutes upon you, you're in jurisdictions unknown, so you challenge jurisdiction, you see? So you have to figure out how you're going to approach this. But
is this an automobile? Is this like for an auto thing?
Yeah, it's just like crossed some line or something, I don't know.
Okay, this is the instructions you want to use then, okay? I'll tell you right now. I do have to go up and clarify the other part of this paperwork, which is down here. Let me see what you used. Which one did you use? You use instruction forms, okay, of course. What did you use, a challenge of jurisdiction?
Verified jurisdiction challenge.
Okay,
the
best way to go about this is this. Okay, this is what I do, and this is something that I've just put together in the past, I don't know, 6 months or so maybe, I don't know. But look, you do first an appearance ticket, okay? Now, you're given notice that you're coming in under a special appearance.
Yeah, I got my special appearance thing. I'm putting that in with this.
So you followed up on, so you're probably working off this. Then you have to have a notice of motion, okay, because the court case...
Okay, got that.
Okay. Then you have the verified jurisdictional challenge, okay?
Yeah, that's what I'm working on.
And, you know, you can call yourself, I do have petition and respondent. You can do that because you are petitioning for them to respond. And it has to be whoever the prosecutor is.
Can the prosecutor, can I put down unknown?
No. All you have to do is call the court up and say, you know, can you give me the name of the prosecutor?
The prosecutor is the state of Oregon.
No. The prosecutor may be the state attorney general or something, which that doesn't make sense. If you're in a, are you in a state court?
I'm in a Deschutes County Circuit Court.
Okay, so you're in a county court. Okay, so there's a county prosecutor, so that's the person you got to find. Look, if you call up the court, you ask the name of the person. Okay. And that's and then if you don't find it, you'll find an address for that prosecutor, and then just put town court prosecutor, and you put the address without a name, but you should try to get a name if you can, and it could be the the district attorney of the county, okay?
Okay.
And that's probably what it is. So. You can call them up to ask.
I'll be more adamant the next time I call. But,
well, the other thing is, remember, the district attorney of the county is one individual, and then they have deputies underneath them. And they're all representing that district attorney, so you can use that district attorney, which would be the county district attorney, okay? So you can use that person as a, generically speaking.
He's the one that I'm requiring to respond to my challenge.
Correct, on behalf of the court, because you're really challenging the court jurisdiction is what you're doing here, and this really is kind of a this particular paperwork you should always use for a jurisdictional challenge or dealing with any kind of a code violation, traffic violation, anything in a court that's not a court of record. I should probably remove the rest of the other papers. That's kind of older, or maybe I'll rewrite them in a better way because it's a little old, an older strategy. What I've learned is...
The problem with most of this stuff is I'm drinking from a fire hose, and I don't have years to research this and learn how to do this. But the Oregon Constitution names this specific court as a court of record. So I put in there... that a court of record meets the following criteria, and I put the five things with footnotes, you know, power to fine, keep a record of the proceeding according to common law, blah, 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 right? So, and then next, I put a court, so what how they're getting personam jurisdiction is they're saying under Oregon Revised Civil Procedure 4 that if they have subject matter jurisdiction, they automatically have personam jurisdiction. So I put any court proceeding jurisdiction. Under that rule is a court not of record. I put a court claiming subject matter jurisdiction under ORS blah, blah, blah is a court not of record.
Exactly. Look, there are two jurisdictions, as I'm sure you know now because you've pretty well defined it pretty well. But basically, to put it into a nutshell, first of all, the court has to have the power and the authority to hear the case. That they do, okay? The second, they have to have personam jurisdiction. As far as you're concerned, they don't. Why? Because you don't work for a government agency, and you are not doing anything in a commercial activity. So that has nothing to do with you. Now, once they apply a code violation of some time, a statute or regulation against you, well, that automatically kicks it out as a court of record. I've talked to a lot of lawyers about being a court of record, and they say, of course we're a court of record. We keep a record. That's what they think it means. They're not taught what a court of record is. They don't understand it. Okay? But the thing that I'm trying to say here is this. You have to make sure you do all your things. If you don't come in by special appearance and refuse to make a plea of any kind, you know, you're not going to plead guilty, you're not going to plead innocent, you're going to plead nothing. You don't have jurisdiction. I want out of this court, cease and desist. That's what I want. And of course, that's what this paperwork was designed to do. And 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 I wouldn't put too much inside here making the argument against the court of record. You know, the paper in itself will lay it all out. But a court of record is defined. It's a footnote which says jurisdiction, court of record under the rules of common law. That's the other thing. They're operating under court, under other kind of rules, okay? And a court of record is a judicial tribunal having the attributes and the exercising functions independent of the person of the magistrate designed generally to hold it. And proceeding according to the course of the common law, not statutory law, common law, its acts and proceedings being enrolled for a perpetual memorial. And that's laid out in Black's Law, and it makes numerous different cases by the Supreme Court to make that the meaning of what it is. So because they call it a court of record, it's not a court of record, and I know you know that. So follow this procedure. You only give it one time. Look, at last time I went to traffic court, my last two times I went to traffic court, the first time I went to I went to traffic court before that, but these last two courts that I went to where I challenged jurisdiction, and they ignored everything, and I came in, and I told the judge clearly, look, I challenged jurisdiction, nobody answered, you seem to think you have jurisdiction, jurisdiction once challenged must be decided, there is no decision on this, you're pulling me back in here, and you're trying to take control of my being at this point. So I'm serving this court notice right now that you understand that if you try to make me come back again, I'm moving this court to federal court. At that point, I was going to move it to federal court. I'm moving to this court to federal court because, and I'm suing everybody in this court from the judge right down to the prosecutor. They went to the side. They were talking, blah, 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 whispering, blah, blah. And they came back and they threw the case out. Okay, so I intimidated them. Okay, and I got out of it with that. I went to another court, my last court I went to, which they got me for speeding, the guy wanted to do everything he could to get control over me. He wanted to put me in jail and everything. I mean, it was wacko, you know? And that, I took it into I didn't take it into the federal court. I decided, let's take it into the state court first, and it gives me another bite at the apple, too, because then I can move it to federal court, and I can also collect more money by suing more people. So I moved it into state court, and in moving into the state court, I filed the papers. Now, they pushed me a little bit. In New York, they do things a little different. Well, I don't need to get into that because I don't know that many states do a breakdown of an index number and an RJI. An RJI is a request for judicial interference, I call it, but judicial intervention is what they call it. And the other one is an index number. And it breaks it down into two different costs. One's $210, the other one's $95 for a total of $305. So what I usually do when I sue somebody, I only pay for the index number, and it pisses the lawyer on the other side because I didn't file for an IJI, and I told him, I don't want that interference. Do you want that interference? You go pay the $95. But anyway, they pressed me on that, and I had to put it in. But I won the case. They defaulted. I filed my papers, and I'm able to collect $400 and change. I wasn't suing them for big money. I just wanted the costs. And then I don't know what you would call it. I'll call it a statute or something. When you win in a court a case and you're suing in your wherefore clause for cost, you can automatically, it's already in the game, and you just have to claim it. There's an additional $200 for your time. So I went for the 3 + 2, $500 to be recouped for restitution. And again, I was not interested in suing them. I was just interested in winning the case. I could sue them.
Well, let me just say something. If you're bringing a traffic case and you're demanding a jury, and you're going even up into the county court or wherever you're going, they don't want them in there. There's not enough there to sink their teeth into. They're going to want to throw it out immediately if you insist on a jury and everything. They're told to never do that because it costs the state money. And so they really don't want to go there. If they're smart, they'll throw it out before it gets to that point, you know, because they really, really don't want to adjudicate your ticket and argue with you and all that stuff. They want you to pay the fine and go home. You know, and they want you to kiss their feet because they lowered it for you or whatever.
And let me just make a, you know, I've just noticed the time, so we're going to have to go a little over time if we want to take the next two people in the queue. But basically all we can tell you is to follow this procedure process, move it into up the line. I'd move it into state court first maybe, and then you can move it from there into federal court, because along the line they're always denying you your due process. That is the key. Due process is your right to be heard in a court of law. And law means common law, whether the word is law, in law, or at law. So it all means common law. So, but, you know, you did make a good point, and everybody should realize that you're learning, and you don't, you're kind of stuck for time trying to get the knowledge and to do what you've got to do. And that should be a lesson to all of us. We need to teach our children in grammar school and in high school. We need to teach our children how to take care of their own business, how to be able, what due process is, how it works, and how to go into a court of law. It should be a course. It should be part of their curriculum. Just like constitution law, you know, the constitution, civics, and again, court access and the common law. All that should be taught in school. So, okay, you got a final?
John.
Okay. You want to take a couple of minutes with each one of these people, Gerard?
What we can do here.
We'll just a couple of minutes with each, and hopefully if they have more than that, we'll have to talk with them next
okay.
week.
We've got a wireless caller from area code 608.
First name and state.
Jen in Wisconsin. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Can't say enough about the school and public Republic Library that is National Liberty Alliance. I stumbled across it years ago and missed the boat, didn't stay with it. I have now returned. Much has transpired across that 7 to 8 years. In 1999, my husband and I decided to learn the Bill of Rights by heart, word for blessed word. And that started our journey in I land here this evening. My question first is the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. How does that come into being? How did it come into being for the purpose of the grand jury presentment of October 10?
You want to answer that, Gerard, or shall I?
Go ahead.
All right. Well,
I basically don't know what we did, but go ahead.
If you go to our welcome page, and I'm sure you started reading this, but I don't know how deep you got into it, and you click on a presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court.
Yep.
But one of the things you'll find in here, you come down to the index here, the table of contents, shall I call it, okay? And part of what we say, we talk about our enforcement, we talk about the presentment, the people's demand, purpose of this, and the authority of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And that starts on page 7. So I'll just take a quick review, and you can read it on your own, and you can always come back and talk some more on this. But if you go to page 7, we the sovereign people have the unalienable right to have government by consent through the free and independent administration of our own juries. We get this out of the United States versus Williams case. We have the unbridled right to impanel and preside over our own proceedings, unfettered and by technical rules, and to investigate merely on suspicion. The judiciary through Congress's bar written laws and the judiciary bar written rules have subverted and tainted our juries and closed the doors of our natural law courts of record. It is the grand jury's function to consider criminal charges, whereas prosecutors have no authority to charge, to change or negotiate away our findings or negotiate a deal with the accused. That would be the prerogative of the Pettit jury. Grand jury indictments are final, cannot be added to or taken away from. Now, I'm not going to read much more of that, but I do want to get to the point of how we came together. First of all, we make the point that we are providentially provided legal resource to address the criminal conduct of the judiciary ourselves, entrusted via natural law to dispense justice.
Okay.
And let me skip down here a little bit. And we go through the background a little bit of the grand jury, and then we discuss on how it is that we came to be, okay? And there's quite a bit here. I'm not necessarily finding it quickly, so I may just kind
if
of...
If you've never read U.S. versus Williams, I strongly suggest
start
that you...
Start there. Okay, okay. So, I guess I'm looking
point
more...
Is, but the point is this. Right. But the point is this. The authority by which we act and how we did it is key. Okay? What we did is we visited every county in America. Not necessarily physically. We would do two or three counties at a time. We had quite a few people running around the United States in different areas. You know, I covered New York and numerous states around us. And we visited these places, and then we brought forth the idea of the grand jury. We got people involved. And then at some point in time, we had the people that we got involved came together and created the unified state common law grand jury. So we have all 50 states created a unified state common law grand jury. So the unified New York state common law grand jury, New Jersey, Connecticut, so on and so forth. They all came together, okay? And then we created with seals, addresses, and everything, and filing of papers, which we filed on the record in the county. Then we formed what was called the unified coming together, filing the unified United States common law grand jury. So if you look at our paperwork, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, every single state, all 50 states, including Alaska and Hawaii, okay, formed that to come together for this. So we're not just a small group of people in New York or some little corner of the country. No, we're from every single state of this union. And that's power and that's authority. Now, we didn't really need to go through all of that, but for what we were up against, we thought we did, and we did.
And if you read U.S. versus Williams, it spells out very clearly there that the grand jury operates outside of the court at arm's distance, and it doesn't ask permission of, and it lays out their powers and authorities, because they'll say, oh, you can't start a grand jury. Absolutely, we can. Okay. And the reason he laid that out was to empower us to do exactly that.
Okay. So in the context of the Seventh Amendment, in suits at common law, the sheriff or coroner, as you said, can impanel, is that the right word, a jury under a circumstance that they determine to be worth exploring, and that would consist of who and how. I've been called a jury in the state of Wisconsin, and they have a big bureaucratic process by which they sample population and get a smattering of people and interview and determine whether or not you get to sit. But doesn't the rising up of the jury come in the same path as the Committee of Safety? How does the jural assembly come in together, and what makes it jural?
Well, one of the things we're doing is we're building administrations, okay, an administration for the juries. And we're looking for four, and these are paid positions. We're taking it away from the bar. The bar has been in control of juries. Every place you go, they have commissioners of jurors. Here in New York, they call them commissioners of jurors. So every court in every county, every state court within every county, all 62 counties here in New York, they have a commissioner of jurors. And that's made up of bar attorneys. And they call, they're the ones that pull forward the grand jury. They give them the questionnaire, same thing with the trial jury, and they orientate them and prepare them for the service that they're about to give. Well, that's a violation of all things, because it's not their job to do that. That's up to the people. This is the people's jury. So what we're doing is we are working to take this away from the bar. Actually, we're looking to get rid of the bar totally, too. But we're looking to take it away from the bar attorneys, give it back to the people, where we're establishing four administrators in every county within the state court, within that county, and one paralegal who is also an administrator. They all have to be qualified and take the courses that we have here at National Liberty Alliance. And the final course, we have listed off here. If you come in to look at our courses, the final one is the jury administrator accredited course. Now, we're also writing a handbook, which I've started to write, but I haven't finished it yet, but I'll get it done soon. But that is sort of a handbook of really governing these people, how to go through things. And we're also attaching them to the committees of safety through the Judiciary Committee, okay? And so that's where people are studying law, and they'll be good advisors for the whole committee. But the thing is this, okay? We're going to take it away from them. These will be paid positions, working 40 hours a week, you know, working under the auspices of the court at hands at arm's distance, okay, and we will orientate the jury. And the only lawful person that can call forward the jury would be the sheriff or the coroner, and in some cases, the people. And clearly, the administrators for the grand jury or the trial jury, whichever, let's say the grand jury, because that's where it begins, but the administrators of the grand jury, they can help by being an assistance to as an investigator and help them in their investigation and anything that they want to investigate. Sometimes they'll find things that they want to look into and consider once people get educated. But in any event, we can become the investigative body for them. So we can come in the name as the administrators, in the name of the grand jury, and go into any government office and demand access into their computers, paperwork, and anything else we want to look at. Because we're the people, we're the boss, and we're investigating this situation. We don't have to tell them who the target is or anything. Or we get the people eventually trained enough where, you know, hopefully enough people get educated, the grand jury can take off on its own and we'll clear the way and make sure that they have that access by making the phone call. Let them know the grand jury's on its way down there looking into information. Give them access to everything. So, you see, this is the people doing the job. This is the authority and the power of the people, and this is the way the common law is structured. But right. People don't know it, and they don't, and they're going to fight tooth and nail.
All emanating from this kernel of the Committee of Safety and a growing
absolutely. You're absolutely right. Well, you're absolutely, in one way or another, you're right. But remember, the probably in all likelihood, you go back to 1215, which is the first, grand jury that at least is recorded. So that is prior to Committees of Safety, but not necessarily so, because Committees of Safety were here with the Pilgrims. The Pilgrims organized Committees of Safety in order to govern themselves when they came to the new land. So it's been around for a while, and that goes back into the 1500s and the early 1600s. So it probably goes back further than that, so I don't know which came first. But there is definitely a connection between the two, no doubt.
Okay. Wow, I'll be back another Monday night, and I'll get in the queue and keep listening. This is okay. Just extraordinary. Bless your work, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we're getting late here. Let's see.
Yes, very late.
Jan, let me hit next question. Okay.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello. Yes.
Hi.
Is this Laura?
It's Laura.
For what state you're from, Laura?
I'm from Oklahoma.
Okay. Go right ahead.
Okay. I'll try to make this brief so we can get to it, but there's a lot of other stuff in case you're questioning. My son was arrested in Utah, and they did a grand jury indictment. Whenever he was finally able to see the evidence, I suppose as a Brady, revelation there, they put in this thing. This officer had been watching the house. He saw another person moving stuff back and forth, and then they pulled him over, and he had a black backpack in the back of the car, okay? And then he immediately got a warrant, and he went to the house, and he arrested my son instead. So his attorney won't bring any of that up. And as far as I can tell, there's nothing saying that he has to. But if they were to look at all the evidence, they would see that it wasn't my son that had it in the first place, that it was someone else.
Yeah, get another lawyer. Not that, it's a shame that you have to get one, but unfortunately we were never taught the law. But you can learn the law, and we're trying to encourage people to learn the law and to teach other people
the
communities. But go ahead.
My question is there any way that, okay, so he's been doing the research in there and answering the questions, and I've been looking it up for him because I want him to learn too. But he has no way of filing anything in there. He has no way of getting rid of his attorney, apparently. And I'm wondering, is there any way that I can file something for him, or can I file?
Well, are you hiring an attorney, or are they giving you one?
They gave him an attorney.
Okay, then that's kind of a trap. What court is it, and what's the charge?
Yeah, trap. It's the federal court in Utah.
Federal court? What authority is the federal court that has to do? What was the federal offense?
Well, what they did was they arrested him with the state, and then after about 2 months, they switched him over to the federal court.
What's the charges?
Okay, it's for, they put down that he supposedly robbed a pawn shop, you know, somebody that, you know, dealt in guns, and then four guns that they said had crossed federal lines or state lines. And then none of the guns that they put down were in any of the evidence that they shown. And
yeah, that's a very fine line here, because again, you got to find out everything that's going on. Did they produce all the evidence and give everything to the lawyer, and did the lawyer produce it to you? You know, look at these lawyers. They rot. They really are. They're horrible. They're horrific. They're the lowest people. They're the scum of the earth. But go ahead.
See, the prosecutor went ahead and put the discovery in, right? And then whenever I finally found my son, because I couldn't even find him, he was trying to get in touch with me, and I don't know. Anyway, by the time I finally found out, he said, I think I have a federal indictment. Because, you know, it was a deal.
Did they catch anyone crossing state lines?
No.
Okay, well, that takes them out of the game to begin with. The other thing is by what was the evidence they used to get the warrant? And was it a warrant that was signed with a sworn affidavit and stating specifically what they're looking for and where they're looking for it?
Okay, and, so the warrant was gained by the officer.
Supported by an affidavit, okay? And a wet ink signature of a judge.
Okay, this is what I'm going to tell you. I can't see the stuff because they put a protective order on it. Okay.
Well, he has a right. He has a right to demand that information.
Okay, so
The lawyer should have it. You should demand it from the lawyer to take it. Look, I would not ever allow a lawyer. If I were to hire a lawyer for some assistance, they'd be what I would call the second chair. And they wouldn't file any piece of paper without my signature on it. And I would really do my own writing anyway. You know, I'd take some advice from the lawyer because they understand the bar process. So, you know, you can get advice.
So let me explain. My son was in jail, and he didn't have any way to look at anything. He had never seen discovery. So whenever I found out that he hadn't, I emailed the attorney saying he'd like to see it. Well, they finally got it to him 2 weeks later. By that time, all the time limits to do everything was already over. But, oh, well, you know, that's their little rules. Anyway, my son went through it all, and he found, number one, the guy did apply for a search warrant with a sworn affidavit.
Okay.
But what
authority? You know, you said that a cop was sitting outside watching and seeing people move things in out back and forth in a car. That doesn't give any power or authority or anything to go get a search warrant. What did they use to go get that? That's what I would be digging up on. You want to find out whether that was a lawful warrant, and if it was an unlawful warrant, case is over.
But the attorney won't file anything. And as I continued digging, and I had him read me that stuff, even though it's illegal for him to do it, as far as the little paperwork goes.
Okay, well,
the guy knew that the black backpack was in this other guy's car. He specifically mentioned it in his sworn affidavit asking for the warrant. And somehow that black backpack ended up in what he said that he on that return to search warrant.
Right. Well, look, it sounds like something you got to dig into. It is unfortunate that it's going to cost you a lot of money to get a lawyer to actually come in there because
I don't have the money to get a lawyer, okay? Yep. I have dug into it, and what I'm asking you is, can I file something like my son asked me to under his name? Or can I get something to a judge?
Yes. If you're in a federal court, you can come in under what's called the next friend. Okay, and if you look up The Next Friend, go into Black's Law. You can find information on our website also. But you go want to find out what's called The Next Friend. And that's what, you know, I've told other people when I try to represent and help people, I quote the fact that I'm a next friend, and it's a federal decision on the Supreme Court, and they have to be obedient to that. And they'll try to say, oh, well, that's in a federal court, but a state court. What are you talking about? You know, the law is law, and it's all, the law is constructive, and you can use federal law as much as state law, and you can use other state laws. You know, everything's interchangeable. That in itself is in the Constitution.
Right.
Okay? So the thing is if you so I presume you have some ability to write, you have a little bit of knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've been working on my information with you guys for a long time.
Okay, look into Next Friend.
Put myself on the side.
Come in as the next friend, and you can come back next week. If you get in early enough, we can spend more time with you on this.
Okay, because I think that if the judge was to look at all of the discovery and was to read through it and pay attention to the way that warrant was gotten and where the stuff had come from, did not come from my son. That officer lied to get the warrant. And I think that as a matter of law, it could be settled like that, is what I'm thinking.
Okay. Here's the other thing, okay? If you go up to the paper we wrote, you find it on the front page, presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court. I'm telling you, this is an education in itself, because we're covering all the bases of the problems that are in the courts. So if you, if you look it up on the table of contents, you'll see Roman numeral number 9, right to practice law. And you go to page 48, and you can read that and get information. Now, this is expanded, I believe, a little more if you go to Education Starts Here and come down to where with the Memorandums of Law. Click on Memorandums of Law. And when you click on that page, you'll see a lot of memorandums in here. Some of them are these videos are on information, and I don't have all of my memorandums and videos, but, you know, you can listen to the videos for whatever applies to you. But underneath the videos, we have all of the written memorandums. So you can click on the written memorandums, and you can use them, cut and paste them. You can get knowledge from them. But in here also, we have the right to free access to the courts, and we also have the right to practice law. I'm looking for it. Let's see.
I've looked at a lot of that with the bar and the way that they've written that stuff up to make it look all official. As you'll see in the fine print, that can't be held. That can't be used in the court. But they are using it by lying to people. And yeah, you know, the only way. Okay, these people are. They act like they can file charges against you for practicing law without a license. You can't have a license.
I understand that. Look it. Let's go back to Next Friend. You're going to stand on federal principles, okay?
Yes.
And if you're in federal court, they will acknowledge it. They have no choice but to acknowledge it. That's number one. Number two, look at their civil law is what they're really talking about. And I don't practice law in civil law. I practice law in common law. I move the court back to a court of record, and I challenge jurisdiction. And that's the position you take. And I have a right to practice law. And nobody can give anyone a license. And you give yourself, the only place you can get a license is from the state. And the state doesn't provide a license to practice law. The bar does. And the bar is just a group of people. It's an organization. They have no power or authority to grant anybody anything. But they've controlled the whole system. They've taken over. But you can make your
position. Yeah, they're a club, and they have membership, but the state's put them over maintaining, you know, their little gig that they've got going on. But my question is with him having that defense attorney, and I know he can be pro se, and I know that I can be next friend, but at this state, can I file a document like that as an next friend without getting rid of his attorney?
Well, look at you. Look at, I would take that attorney and set him aside and say, look, you don't do nothing without talking to me. I don't want to see a piece of paper be filed in this court without me reviewing it and maybe making some changes to it. As a matter of fact, I will write most of the papers, and I'll use you as an advisor to some degree and allow you to speak from time to time when I feel comfortable and want to do that. But you got to lay the law down. Let him try to have himself be removed, okay?
So that's my son being an adult.
Hold on. The most important part is coming. And that is, you want everything in the record that he has, everything, police reports. You want a copy of the warrant. You want everything they got, all the evidence against you, or anything that really will be helping your case. You want it all. I want to review it. I want to look at it, and I want it now. Let's go. I'll drive over and meet you at your office. Let's get all that information. That's what I would do. I would take control. I'll tell you what, they're going to run away. And that's fine, because the last thing you really want is a bar attorney. And they'll give you another one, and you'll do the same thing to that one, too. But at some point, the judge is going to tell them they can't leave, and they're going to have to stick with the client. Then you're going to hold down the fort and put your feet down and say, this is the way it's going to be. You need to take control of your case. No one knows your case more or better than you do. Okay? That is the key. So get
okay,
the...
But it's my son's case. Okay? And he's in Utah. And I've been talking with him this whole time, and he's been pressing this attorney. But he doesn't have the time in that I do, and he doesn't have the means to draw up any kind of a document or anything else. And this attorney, when he pressed him to get this out to him, he filed that he needed a mental health evaluation and left him sitting in there for another 4 months. No evaluation.
That is another game they play. That is another game. These people are so evil. I'll tell you, that's why every one of these judges have got to go. Because they've allowed and they've applied and they exercise this stuff, and they've damaged people so bad, they have damaged families, and it makes me crazy.
When he still wouldn't plea, the attorney started in with the pretrial stuff, and the other attorney filed a superseding indictment, and they added three more guns.
If you're going to refuse to plea, you got to follow that up with something like challenging the jurisdiction. Why am I refusing to plea? I'm refusing to plea because I'm challenging the jurisdiction. You don't have jurisdiction.
But his attorney wouldn't put it forward. And what I'm wondering...
So you got to take control of the attorney. You need to become somewhat of a partnership, but you got to be the majority partnership with that attorney in this case. Nothing should go out.
Can I do that with it being my son's case?
You sure you can? Of course you can. Your son has a right to counsel, and you became that counsel.
Yeah, and I've been sending the attorney messages telling him exactly what he needs to do with it. So
no,
I've got documentation.
But you need to get everything. I would go to his office, and I would sit in his office and say, I want everything in the file that is in this case. And then I would...
The prosecutor and the judge wrote that it's under protection, and nobody can see it
When you file the fact that you're coming in a paper, you go over here to our page here. You can use this particular form. Education starts here. Come down to law and come over to court forms, okay? Now, you heard us talking a little earlier with someone on the traffic court case, but if you come to that case, the traffic court case here, and you then file your papers, an appearance ticket, okay? So you file
an appearance.
Okay, now we're coming in at a special appearance, and you're coming in on behalf of your son, so I would leave it as a special appearance because that leaves it open to the possibility of challenging this court's jurisdiction. And if they're applying any kind of a statute to you or the rules, you see, once they apply the rules and statutes upon you, civil law, now you're no longer a court of record. They don't have jurisdiction. Now, it's an uphill battle, bear in mind. But the other thing is this. Also, stretch your case out as long as possible because we're trying to get our court systems back to and open the doors of justice. December is coming close, and, you know, once we get to the other next year, I think things, and I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't think it's going to take very long to really move the courts back to where they belong because... you know, if we're going to take back and go back to the Constitution, we have to open up our courts of justice. And right now, the courts of justice are closed.
Well, I'm wanting to help with that. People don't understand what's going on in these courts.
The point I'm trying to make, though, is you want to take as much time as you can to really get this case before it actually goes anywhere. I mean, the fact that you're coming in by special appearance, taking control, and you're going to let it be known to the judge, well, I'm going to work with the attorney. I'll let him help us. But I'm in here, and I'm representing my son. He wants counsel. I'm his counsel. I'm operating under what's called the next friend. And if you're in a federal court, you said, right?
Yes.
Okay, so next, they understand what an ex-friend is. They can't argue against that. Okay, so it's already in there. So you use that. Now, they're not going to like this because they don't like someone who's not a bar attorney that's not going to play ball and sucker punch their client.
Whenever I do that, when I do that special appearance, can I go ahead and file a document to get that brought out?
Well, at that point, you need to get all the evidence and everything in this case. Why would anything be sealed? That doesn't even make sense. How old is your son?
Oh, he's 32.
Okay, well, hey, look, he's not a child. What's anything sealed for?
Well, exactly. There's nobody else in the case. There's nothing to hide except for the fact that the attorney, number one, used a witness to get the warrant that they also have in there that is
you got a lot of things you have to investigate. We don't have too much more time tonight, but we can talk more next time. But the thing is this, you've got a lot to investigate, and you need to get all the evidence, and you need to file. The only papers you need to file in the court is for information. You know, do a writ mandamus and a demand on by what authority are you sealing this case.
I wonder if I can do a FOIA with the police department and get the documents.
No, because if the court claims to have sealed the case, you're not going to get anything from anyone. But the lawyer should have access to this stuff.
Right.
Okay. And you should demand to the lawyer that you need access. I would give him a notice in demand. Are you familiar with a notice in demand?
No, I would communicate
with them on a level face to face with the individual. And when they deny you, then I would give them a notice in demand. And a notice in demand is also found on that same page with court forms. And basically, you're going after the lawyer now, and you're going after money and damage and everything else you can get if he doesn't comply, because he doesn't have the authority to hold this stuff back.
Right. Okay.
With that,
then I'll get on those documents then.
Because we are super late, okay?
Okay, I know. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. I'll get on the documents that you told me about.
Okay. Have a good night.
All right. Thank you.
All right. You got anything final to say, Gerard, before we close down? Other than good night?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, I was talking to Gerard anyway. Okay, thanks, Laura. All right. Okay, with that, we're going to end the program for the night. Sorry for running over. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Good night, everybody.